with that.
We are going to talk about a topic that is going to become more and more important in a digital sovereign world. We have the speakers, Tobias Bader and Klaus Freitag. They will tell us about their learnings in implementing the file sharing app platform OpenCloud. Big applause, please. So, hello, thank you, and thank you to everyone who's organizing this event. It was a lot of effort. You guys are great, thank you for that. So, thank you for your interest in this. So, Klaus and I are going to tell you a bit about OpenCloud, as you mentioned already. So, after the next 60 to 45 minutes, you know what OpenCloud is, who it is for, what kind of mistakes we've made in the last couple of years, and where we want to go with this, and how you can do this yourself. So, should I introduce you? No, I'll do it myself. So, hello, my name is Klaus. I am active in open source communities for many years. I've been working for SUSE for many years and worked with OpenSUSE and KDE for a long time as a developer. So my favorite language there, C++, and since a couple of years I'm working in the file sync topic because I have a I've developed a desktop client for many years as a full-time job, and right now my full-time job is the CTO of OpenCloud. I'm a colleague of him, so I'm in the comfortable situation to receive money to develop open source software. I'm doing this in 6 years now. My favorite thing is to make open source software accessible for everyone so it works and is simple to use. So before we start, the Forbes list always kind of publishes who's the richest person in the world, and the same thing exists for fictional characters. And so who do you think is the richest fictional character in the world? Just shout if you want to.
Batman.
So we have Batman, Lara Croft. I don't know who Scrooge McDuck is. So it's Dagobert Duck in German.
Also,
so anyone's got an idea?
Mr. Burns, okay.
Okay, we're somebody said Mr. Burns, and the winner is Smaug. So he lives in the caves with a lot of gold around him in the Hobbit, and his wealth is estimated at 62 billion dollars, depending on the volume. So there's probably a Reddit thread about that. But the point that we want to make here is that Smaug is actually quite poor compared to the real richest person in the world, weighing in at $320 billion. And so why am I telling you about this? The reason I'm telling you this is because it's crazy that the reality is surpassing fiction here. And so we believe that centralization threatens the free internet the way we know it, or the way we want to have it, decentralized with open standards, net neutrality. And so this is my drive as to why I'm working on this app, on this app suite, and we're in the situation of offering this as a free software. We are funded by a company that is behind this, so there's monetization with this, and contributions are always welcome. Not only code contributions, but even just likes on an issue in GitHub, reactions, testing, and so on. So what is open cloud? If someone asks me, it's basically OneDrive except without spying. It's free file sharing software that you can host yourself. There's a mobile and desktop application, and the focus of this is that we want to be simple and stable for the system admins to make it easy to host this software, because I believe that those are the people that we need to do this for, because they can't sleep well when they know that there's crappy software on the servers and the data of thousands of people might be in this software and might be in danger. And so this is the goal that we are following with this software. Question that we receive often is that this software is quite new, and so people ask themselves if they can use this productively. And so yes, you can do this. So looking at the software historically, so you know OwnCloud from Nuremberg with a fork, the fork being Nextcloud about 10 years ago. And then 2019, we had the first commit for what was back then called Infinite Scale. And so we forked this about 1 year ago under the name OpenCloud. And so now this is programmed in Go, is a modular system instead of using PHP. And the tech stack in 2022 had a very hard test with a big deployment with 2 million users and 51 petabytes of storage in total. So the first learning that we have is that open source saved my job, basically. And so what you can see here is this fork. And so the way that this was created is that the old company was acquired, and I didn't want to stay there. And so what I decided to do was to fork the software and then continue to offer it. Because from then, what I do is that, or what I did was the software didn't belong to the company. I forked it. I was able to fork it and then continue developing this software. The second thing is, and I believe this is one of the most important things, is we attempt to make the software as simple as possible. So the KISS principle is one of the major principles that we're following this. And so this is what the software looked like in the beginning. You can see on the right side the sharing settings where you have to decide which permissions a user has on a certain file, and we've simplified that quite a lot with a role-based access control system. So you can only see and edit, and you can modify this. You can make this as complex as you want to, but the default state is what you can see right here. The entire UI and UX principle is the progressive disclosure process, so that you don't want to overload the users in the beginning when they're just starting to use the software. And so you want to make it as simple for them as possible to use the software and give them the most important option right away. So, as a comparison, on the left, this is what it looked like in the beginning again. The next thing is secure by design, which is a development principle. I'm showing you here an example of how we implemented this in the UI. So by standard, or by default, you have to create a password for publicly shared links. A lot of people struggle creating these passwords if they have certain requirements, like more than 12 characters or so. And so what we've done is we've created a password generator right in the UI to create a password for them as a support for the users. Searching data usually is quite hard. You need to figure out where you place things, and we have a very cool one. I'm actually quite surprised at how well it works, and the search really works very, very well. And so basically, every time you press a key, you get the search gets started, and you get a new search suggestion. It's really fun to use, honestly. It also works with text search, so you can search for keywords within the files of the documents that you have stored. And if you're bored, you can just type in something random and then be surprised by what kind of files you have lying around. You also have Web Office included. A lot of people are looking for this with Open Solutions. We have Collabora Office, and so this also works collaboratively, so you can have multiple people editing the same file simultaneously. So one of the important learnings that we've had was that browser refresh F5, a lot of users don't really know this or don't really have this. For example, tablets don't have this. For example, the scenario that we had is that a teacher was distributing some worksheets to the students, and first hand raises and they say they didn't get something. And so what they would have had to do is refreshing the page because it was not yet reloaded. And so what we've done in the UI is that we are using server-side events so that you don't have to manually refresh the page, but rather the server will communicate that something has been updated. And so if you have multiple clients open at the same time and you upload data on one, you will immediately see the changes on the other side. If you delete files, you will see the change right away. So another thing that's very important is that basically every user or a lot of users say I hate change. And so our learning was that we need to create the interface in such a way that users immediately feel at home when they use it. So when I start with the basics, the file types, especially from people coming from Windows that we want to include as well, they have certain colors that correspond to the document types. So for example, Word documents are blue, text files are white. So we implemented those color codings and keybinds to make it easy for users to use it. And we debated quite a while on whether we want to have a right-click in this software, because the people don't really differentiate whether they're in a desktop software or in a normal program. So we need to implement this to make it easier for them to use. And so we're showing you the upload here again. Right, and so as you can see, the Control A keybind is working, and now we do drag and drop to a folder. And as you can see, it's everything super fast, and this is very important, and feedback that we get a lot is that the software is very fast, and this is something that we learned, is that the software needs to be responsive. Another super important point that we've only learned with time is that accessibility is very important by people, and so something that we noticed there is that this is usually quite hard for few people to do. So short topic on accessibility, what you need to have is a sufficient amount of contrast for text. So this is not very accessible. As you can see right here, the contrast is not very well. I'm not sure if you can see this, the beamer is quite bright, the projector is quite bright. And so what we've noticed is that it's really important that you have accessibility, because lots of people need this and lots of different people need this. And so the word clicked for us was that everyone at some point in their lives is impacted in one way or another. I am wearing glasses, so for me it's important that the text is not too small. But even if you're a father and you have a child on your arm and you need to do something with the mouse quickly without using the keyboard at the same time or without having access to the keyboard, then it's really great if you can do this exclusively with the mouse or with the keyboard. So this really works. You can use the, for example, you can use the entire software with only the keyboard, which, for example, is important if your hand is shaking due to medical reasons. And so a lot of people think that they're not permanently impacted by things, but there are temporary things as well. For example, if you're in the subway and you can't hear properly. So this is a quite nice graphic here. So different types of afflictions that could potentially happen temporarily. And so the nice thing about the accessibility guidelines is that it's a great way to have a wait for the users. You don't need to do accessibility tests in the first place. You just work through the accessibility guidelines and you implement them and you just apply the scheme to it, and you've already achieved quite a lot with this.
The next thing is, and it's very important, well, we're doing file sharing, and I can share this slide set with Klaas, and we are working collaboratively on it. And we found out that the classic file sharing mechanisms that we are all used to are basically broken. Let's say we have Alan on the left side and Mary on the right side, and Alan shares a project with Mary. And what happens after some time, always in an organization, then Alan maybe leaves the organization, and or he has a parental leave or something like that. And he's leaving the organization, and the file or the folder is disappearing. And this means for Mary that there's data loss. She can't access the data anymore. And yeah, that's stupid. Let's multiply that, and let's say not only two persons are involved by multiples. Alan is sharing with four persons, and what then happens is that we get some sort of spaghetti file sharing. You completely lose the overview, and this is it's a very prominent problem, because yeah, you basically lose overview of who shares data with whom. And if Alan leaves the organization, then four people have the problem of data loss. In this image you might have seen before, that's the mental model we have of spaghetti shares, and this is what we want to have instead. So what we did is, you can you don't share your files in your personal space anymore, but we created a share. We created a space where all the data belongs to the organization, which means these files can not only managed by one single person, but so this one-to-one relation is not existing anymore, but there are multiple persons can manage the data. And this has been a problem before. Alan can nominate someone to be some sort of janitor for his files, or yeah, you can do this with as many persons as you want. And if one person leaves the organization, for example, a classical example would be the school, when the students are leaving the first class and going to second class, And this is a situation where this would work quite well. Spaces also have their own quota. This was previously always tied to a person, and this is now not restricted to a person, but the quota is belonging to the whole organization. Now we could still ask, well, why yet another file cloud? Because there are already a few. And we said, yeah, we definitely need another one, because on the X-axis, I'm talking now about larger installation, is the load. If load can mean many files per hour, many files per second, large files, and so on. And on the y-axis, the total cost of ownership. And in the old architecture, we see that the overhead was growing exponentially. And if you have a larger cluster standing around with that problem, then that's no longer maintainable. So what we wanted to achieve is that this scales in a more linear fashion. With Open Cloud, it does not matter that much how many resources you have to manage. And we did a little research and checked which component is causing most of the outages. And the most prominent component in file sharing systems is the database. In classical architectures, the database holds the metadata, like the name of the file, who stored it, with whom is the file shared, and so on. And the file blob on the right side, this is basically what you want to have in the end if you access the database. And if you upload a file in a classic database, then the problem is that the data is being separated from the metadata. The file upload goes to the storage. The storage is cheap, but metadata is.
So when
I'm accessing the database, I'm not really interested in the metadata, but I'm interested in the payload. And the foundation of this is that there is some sort of office in our mental model with the metadata, and the storage is in the file blobs are in the background. And these two data sets have to be synchronized. If there is an inconsistency in the database, then the file is no longer existent for the user, because the link to the storage, for example, could be missing. And this is a classic split brain problem. You always have to synchronize two systems and make sure that these two systems are always synchronized. And this is stupid. And the solution we have for that is that we store the metadata directly in the storage, as you would deal with files on your desktop computer, for example. The file name is essentially a part of the file, and well, this is what we did here as well. The white labels containing the metadata are metaphorically stuck to the blobs themselves. And that's a rather simple conclusion we took here. We are pretty happy with that, because the system becomes much more reliable. It's not another component. A point of failure is basically gone away. There is no knowledge about databases required anymore, and the system scales with the size of the storage. If you just insert more disks, if you increase from 5,000 to 50,000 disks, then the system scales with that, and you only have one source of truth.
Jetzt geht's schon los. Why did we go this way, and why didn't we not go with a microservices architecture, for example? We noticed that the old architecture in the PHP world we used to have earlier, that this technology is not scaling very well. In the monolithic approach, everything we had before, everything is basically mushed together. PHP is being loaded per request. We know this is not the full truth. There are caching mechanisms, but in general, when a request is coming in, the PHP process is spinned off, and the request is answered. And the code in this request, in theory, has access to all the memory structures. Everything is executed in the same memory context. And the plugins should also be installed in the core system. And as soon as there is a problem or an error in the plugin, then the consequence was that requests could not be answered anymore. There were crashes, memory problems were occurring, and stuff like that. And these are all issues such an architecture will accumulate over time, especially if an architecture is being adapted over time to other use cases that were not intended previously. And this can lead to complete outages. Today, we converted this into a microservice architecture. You can think of it like a system of smaller units that interact over various interfaces with each other, and by these interfaces the components are separated from each other. Services don't have access to the internals of other components, and services only communicate over predefined and well-defined interfaces, and a problem in one component cannot endanger the whole system anymore. Of course, there is no black and white situation. We can construct situations that are very problematic and can bring the system down. Examples for that are too much communication, improper interfaces, and things like that. But in the end, this is a much more modern and much better scaling architecture. You can grasp much better. Oh, sorry. That's an overview over the architecture we are actually using. We have clients of different types. They communicate with the system over an API gateway, and we typically use HTTP-based APIs. We are orienting ourselves with standards. We use existing solutions and integrate them into our system. This is not always simple, but there's a large block of services that offer service authentication, sharing, system storages and caches. We are using large network attached storages. In our architecture, the metadata storage has the way how we store metadata. That's the problem, that we have to cache a lot. It's not easy to search the whole file system. Classic use case would be you want to search for a file, and then you wouldn't want to do a find, and this is not working out of the box with our system. And for that, we are using caches, we use NUTs and other building blocks. And below that, we have different storages, which are abstracted in a way such that we can apply different storage systems and gain a certain degree of flexibility here. While talking about storage, I want to show you a feature which is called File Observer. In essence, probably you already know that all these clouds, OwnCloud and Nextcloud, they can't manipulate files in a simple way directly on the file system. You have to execute a tool and then fingers crossed that everything works out, and metadata is synchronized and so on. And well, at the beginning of the project, we had a pretty clever non-readable file tree which could attach IDs to ELOF of IDs to the files. We called it DecomposeFS. It was pretty interesting and powerful, but we found out that this would not be accepted by users. Nobody wants to have a file system where you can't actually see the files, and the files were always stored with a UUID in certain shared file trees. The lookup between the files was pretty fast, but the human could no longer see where the data is actually stored, and especially admins don't really like that. You get the feeling that you don't have the control over your data in the system anymore, and we changed that. And at the same time, we added a feature where you can manipulate files live in the file system in a, some sort of controlled environment, and this will automatically be reflected in the user interface. And this way, well, you can directly manipulate the file and you can directly see how this is being synchronized over all the different clients, the web client, the client on your machine, and so on. And, well, this is interesting for different use cases. We will look at this here, how this is working. This is the performance of the system is pretty much depending on the underlying file system. Under Linux, for example, there's iNotify. Other kernels also have different mechanisms. And the changes are enqueued in the whole system. Larger file systems or more complex file systems like IBM TPFS or SFFS, they have special support integrated for file system notifications we can use here. And all this we integrated in OpenCloud, and you can use that today. Well, we say here that that these events are queued and so on. Yes, the events are stored, debounced, and so on. The big problem in such situations is the concurrency, and it might be that there are other changes that are interfering with the change I made right at the moment, and so on. So you have to take care of that. Other applications would be migration, OpenCloud. Install OpenCloud, then copy the file and be done with it. The same is true for backups. If you tried to back up a PHP on cloud in a reliable way, then you notice that it's not so easy to have a compatible backup of both file system and database. And it's pretty common that you get a database that matches the file system only to a certain degree. And in our case, we just back up files, we generate snapshots, we pull the files, and that's our backup. And very important is that extended attributes are always also put into the backup. Another use case would be applications that don't want to go with more modern APIs, but directly write into the file system form. For example, if devices just put data into a certain network share, then you can pull the whole environment directly into our open cloud. Let's talk about different deployments we can offer here and that we support. Well, there are different, many millions of deployments, but we don't have focused each and every one of them. But this can be a problem that basically kills a team. I don't know how much support we had to, we would have to supply here. It's one of the most important things we support is Docker Compose. We have an open cloud full Docker Compose, which is hopefully pretty well and easily configurable. It contains everything you need, and it can enable and disable features in a modular way. There's a ticker inside it. The web office is integrated, OCR, and all these cool things, all these mechanisms and tools are integrated. If you like Docker Compose and are used in using it, then it's basically up and running within 10 minutes. And, well, if you want to scale it a little bit better, then there is Kubernetes.
Right, so we have a Kubernetes support, and I will say about this that we have a Helm chart that we provide to our enterprise, if I'm allowed to say that, to our enterprise customers, not to our community. There are community variants of this, and we noticed that we are not capable of supporting the heterogeneous setups that we have there. And so there are community maintained open cloud Helm charts. We do have for customers supported Helm chart versions, and so we need to provide support for enterprise customers. And so you probably know Kubernetes. It's good for large deployments. It scales well. It utilizes hardware quite well. So other deployment options, my favorite one is the curl deployment. I even fixed it this morning because there was something broken. Not a lot of people use this apparently. So it appears to be working now. So you have similar functionality with this. You can install this bare metal. Not sure if anyone's doing this, maybe for hobby reasons or something. There's also a package for OpenSUSE from some community supporter creating that package and packaging it. So let's talk about web extensions for a moment. So you can extend the system in two main ways. So either you build an entire application, so then you profit from the system that we have with the authentication, the design and everything, the different building blocks that you can put together with the permission system that you can use as well and the access to the files. So basically all kinds of abstractions that you have above the storage system. And so what I'd like to show there when I present this is, I'm not sure what this is. It's Super Mario. I know that it's Super Mario. So it says so. here, but I'm not sure which emulator this is or which console is emulated here. So you can play, for example, this in on cloud with the extension. And so something that may be a bit more obscure is that you can extend certain components in the web client, like for example, right here, more detailed descriptions of certain file types where you can get more metadata on a file, like for example, in a picture when it was taken or other options. And so this is basically a plugin into the viewer that already comes with OpenClaws, and we've activated this by default at the moment. And you can build extension for this quite easily, and then integrate it into the system. It's documented. And it's simple to do this, really. There is a series of web extensions out there, not as many as for other platforms, comparable platforms, but we have a couple of interesting things right here that you could look at for some examples that might be useful for you. Right, and now the release life cycle is something that we have to explain every now and then. We have production releases for customers that we are supporting accordingly and have long-term support solutions and models. And so for those, we have a bi-yearly release. We're keeping the version stable. You have longer updates. Cycles for enterprise customers and enterprise customers basically. And what we're doing at the same time, which is more interesting for the community, is that we're doing a rolling release cycle. This is released every 3 weeks. Whenever we end a sprint, we have 3 week sprints in the development. So after every sprint, we do a release. And our measure there is that we want to design the update in a way that we create value for the customer with the update, and then give them something that at the very least is an improvement over the previous version of the software. And so you always have the latest and greatest features with the rolling release cycle. We have a quite good stability with this, even because we're using an automated testing framework, which really tests everything in the platform, so that we, in the last year, we did not really have any major errors using this, so that something would really break in a very bad way. Or we have some data loss or something. We did not have that. And so for the rolling release, we are not offering any support. So for business customers, we have an offering. This is what we make money with. So something that we can mention here is the licensing situation. So everything that we do is open source. It's licensed either under Apache 2 or GPL. Which, if you paid attention with the Helm charts, and the Helm charts are not public, so for this, this is relatively irrelevant what license they have if they're not there. So, right, so how do we get started on this? Well, basically, you have a couple of resources here that we want to show you. We have the documentation. We have the link to the repository. You have a matrix chat. We have a matrix chat. And we have a public roadmap of the software where we try to publish what we're working on at the moment, and this is something that I don't really haven't really seen with other projects that they publish the roadmap as well. Because if there's a company behind it, but I think that it's important to do this for transparency if you are a company developing an open source software. It doesn't always work, it's not always that simple, but we try our best to make this complete. And so one thing that I want to mention in the end is that somebody told me at FOSDEM last year that if you want contributors, you need to advertise this. And so now I'm saying this. We really appreciate contributors of any kind. So if you want to contribute, then feel free to do so. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for the great talk. So we have 17 minutes left for questions, and we have a first question here. When will there be an open cloud installation party? Oh. Yeah, well, we could do that. If there is interest, then I suppose we could organize something there. I think I may know that person there. We could potentially do this, yes. So we have the option here at the event to do self-organized sessions, so possibly we could even do this here. So do we have more questions? So do you have any options for like contacts or calendars, or do you have something planned there? So I think we forgot this to mention it. Yes, we do have by default an integration with Radical. Radical is a Python-based calendar and contact backend. So initially this was not maintained for a long time, and so we didn't really pay attention to this very much. Right now it is maintained, or it has become maintained, and we're quite happy about this. And in this case we were really lucky, and so we implement this and it works really well. And unfortunately it doesn't have a UI in the web, but in the age of mobile endpoints like phones and tablets, I suppose that might not be super interesting because it integrates really well with other calendar applications that you could have on your end device. So it works really well. So if you have, for example, K-Organizer, it will work by default. So I have a follow-up question. So Radical is its own backend service. So does this mean that in the Docker Compose setup this gets started in the background, or do I need to do this myself? So indeed you have the Compose comes with a .env example file, and you need to copy this to .env and then modify it a little bit. But in the bottom, you can toggle different services depending on which one you want to have, with a little bit difficult syntax of the .env file, and you can basically toggle the Radical YML if you want to have it. So the only thing that you can have there is that Radical can't do OpenID Connect because, well, it doesn't really make much sense, because the clients usually don't speak OpenID Connect as well. And so for this one, you have to use an app token to do this, and you have to configure this prior in the Open Cloud instance, and then you can use it in the application. But that you can do in the UI, for example. So we have a question in the back as well. Right, so the competition has a quite big problem that when you modify a local file, that even if you save it, it has difficulty synchronizing, and that it's easy for another person to modify this file in the web at the same time. So are you going to do a better job at doing this?
That,
So that is an interesting question. Some do it like this, some say different. So what you're talking about is, will we implement locking or not? Meaning I'm opening a file locally and everyone else can see that I'm modifying this and keep their hands off it. And, or, for example, the better solution, at least from what I believe to do this, if Toby allows me to do this, the tool would have to understand that the file is locked and then would have to tell you that you're not supposed to touch it, or the next step in that is to have the option to collaboratively edit a file using the local client, so that if somebody wants to work with you, he or she can work on the local client. I can say to that that locking is doable. So OpenCloud can do web dev lock, but it is not yet integrated into the client, and this is something that we are want to look into. And so this is a topic that we need to solve at some point. I think Toby would like to have the fully collaborative option, and I think that the locking method would be good for now. And we don't have this at the moment. So yeah, we've been thinking about this for a long time. The problem exists since a long time, and it's really hard to solve. It's hard to solve it in a proper way. So another question in the back. So follow-up question to this. So the fully collaborative workflow. So my personal experience was that no one really does this because, and you might be able to explain more there, is that the file formats usually don't support this, because if you have a LibreOffice document and you edit this, then theoretically the document would have to do some strange locking mechanisms to collaboratively edit this with a with a local client or a web client, which effectively does not work on a zip file, and you know they would have to send each other like cursor positions, and there are commercial products which I don't want to mention here right now. And so what I want to ask is, do you really want to get into this or to take on this challenge? Right. So what I can say about this topic is that I believe that it's very hard to do this on the file type level. So what you describe as an RPC system is, that could be doable. There are already theses about that. Maybe one or the other of you already knows this. I don't remember the keyword. There are concepts for how to do this. And I want to say that this is not something that we can do on our own. We're working together with Collabora on this, and so this is probably something that would have to come and probably will come from the side of Collabora. Okay, we have 9 minutes left in case there are any more questions. So I want to do some advertisement here. The topic of collaborative editing in Collabora, that is a topic, and I admit that I did not really like that. But in the last couple of years, we have invested quite a lot into this and optimized and debugged and improved the situation. So you shouldn't get discouraged by old experiences to have a look into this again, because it really got a lot better than it was before. And as always with these things, all of you are administrators, an important thing is fonts. Always install the fonts, they have to be there, or at the very least the equivalent equivalences for the spacings and kernings, so that text is not stretched or distorted. Right, so I wanted to have a question as well. So do you have a question with Zendis to have talks about OpenDesk integrations? So my impression is that that Sandus is currently overloaded with this. We would really like to do this, and I believe that they are not really able to keep up with the challenge at the moment, but we would really love to do this if it was possible. Right, so with that, I would like to request another big applause for our speakers for the amazing talk.